VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, single-family housing is coming under attack. Our guest today has long warned about the attack on private property. He's warned about such things as sustainable development, smart growth, the American Planning Association. He's warned about the United Nations. He's warned about Agenda 21 and its goals. And now there's another attack that's unfolding against single-family homes and against single-family neighborhoods. Our guest indicates that single-family homes are the greatest example of private property ownership, and now those who are advocating for sustainable development are calling zoning for single-family neighborhoods as racist. Joining us today, we welcome back Tom DeWeese. He's president of American Policy Center. Tom is one of the nation's leading advocates of individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy, back-to-basics education, and American sovereignty and independence, and protecting our constitutionally guaranteed rights. He's a former newspaper editor. He's author of Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property and Individuals, and Erase, a political novel. Tom, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
It's good to be with you, Jim. Thank you.
Racist? I mean, really, Tom, how can we equate single-family homes and neighborhoods as being racist?
Well, according to the mayor of Minneapolis, the people who are living in single-family home neighborhoods zoned for that are really self-segregating themselves from people they don't want to live in that neighborhood, of different races, of different economic backgrounds, and so forth. And so that is racist to just do that. And never mind that people there worked hard to be able to have a home in a place where the kids could play in a neighborhood that they thought was safe and so forth. That's just not fair.
Self-segregation is a term?
Self-segregation. Mm-hmm.
My.
Yeah.
We're also seeing terms like social injustice and social equity.
Yeah, the social justice warriors that we hear about all the time, everything's politically correct, environmentally correct, all this kind of thing. What they do is they're working to replace the rule of law with their opinions and their own particular kind of moral standards, and that's social justice.
Now, you mentioned Minneapolis, but it's not just Minneapolis that's going this direction.
No. Minneapolis is one of the first to really move in that direction, but you've also got across the country. Now you're hearing Los Angeles, of course, and Baltimore, Maryland. The NAACP filed a lawsuit in Baltimore, Maryland a couple years ago saying that it wasn't fair. People living in single-family home neighborhoods, they were getting the better schools, we needed to move apartment buildings into those neighborhoods and give folks of lower income levels the same advantages of the people who live there. So this is the argument that they use. They actually won the suit, and now Baltimore is supposed to spend $300 million of taxpayer money to go in and build these buildings into single-family neighborhoods. And as a part of that suit, the other thing that was declared in that is that it is not fair for landlords to ask potential renters if they can afford to pay the rent. That, too, is racist.
Oh, my.
And so they're not allowed to do that anymore.
I mean, banks can't give that kind of scrutiny either, or what?
Well, it was in this lawsuit, it was specifically aimed at landlords. So I don't know if it's affected banks yet or not, but it's, that's a common question to ask. If
absolutely.
You're renting somebody something,
can
you afford it?
Wow. You've also learned, Tom, that Oregon is about to become the first state to eliminate single-family zoning.
Yeah, this is the biggie. The Oregon House Speaker, Representative Tina Kotek, is the one who wrote the bill. It has now been passed by the Oregon legislature. I'm not sure yet whether the governor signed it yet or not, but is poised to do it and probably will. And it's the same argument. And one of the things that Representative Kotek said was that we have a housing crisis in Oregon. Now, let's look at the policies that they've put in place that have created this housing crisis.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things they've done, let's take Portland, Oregon, which has become the poster child for smart growth, sustainable development policies. This is where a lot of it began. It spread across the country. But they put these urban growth boundaries around the city, and they say everything outside the city will be open space. We will not allow the city to expand because that's urban sprawl. And we can't have that. So everything's going to be in the city. This is where you get all this talk about the, you know, the growing high-rises and the light rail trains and bike paths and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And because everything's going to be right there where we can just walk to work and we can walk to the grocery, ride our bike or whatever. And, this has been 20 years now since they did that. And what has happened is that the population of Portland, Oregon has grown by 80%. And they have asked for, some people have asked for them to extend the urban growth boundary, and they refused to do it by no more than 6%.
Wow.
So now you have a housing crisis. They created it themselves.
So people are not able to move out of that urban growth boundary? Or?
They won't allow any kind of development outside of that. They won't bring roads and, you know, the things you need, sewer lines and power lines and things like that out there. It's in the urban growth boundary, and so we can't develop there.
I find that very interesting. And I also, what's so interesting to me, it seems that all of a sudden it's happening all at once, but from different parts of the country, of single-family homes and neighborhoods equated with racism. Where does this come from? Why are we seeing this pop up simultaneously in different locations around the country?
Your local development planners commissions in your community would be telling you, well, this is all just local, the people want this. Absolutely not true. What you're seeing happen here, Barack Obama created a program called Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing through HUD. And there's a grant situation there. Now, Ben Carson has tried to push this back, but he has not been successful because 90% of the people who still work in HUD are leftovers, and they're ignoring such orders. And, of course, there's lots and lots of pressure from these NGO organizations like the American Planning Association and a whole bunch of other planners, the Sierra Club, Nature Conservancy, all those guys have just absolutely ganged up on Ben Carson for it and not letting him do this. But these grant programs, one of the things in the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Act was that single-family homes were not fair and that we need to move in high-rise apartments and that sort of thing there. And, you know, what this is really setting everything up for is these smart growth programs. Single-family homes, what they say about single-family homes is we don't have room for that because if we could build an apartment building there, we could put 100 families in that space instead of you with just your kids playing in the backyard, and that's just not fair. We have a crisis. And so everything that comes together with sustainable development is based on crisis, housing crisis, food crisis, environmental crisis, on and on and on. And so they use that crisis mentality that we have to put these things in place. And now you have your city councilmen, your county commissioners surrounded by these NGO organizations, these non-governmental organizations that helped write these programs in the first place. It's their private agendas. It's what they want to have put in place. And they are bringing these grants into the community and the various different programs and getting the city councilmen and stuff to sign on to it. And, you know, one of the biggest problems, Jim, is that people who are affected by these things aren't going to the city council meetings, aren't making their voice heard. They're all just accepting it, well, it's nothing I can do about it. And meanwhile, all they do, even if you've got good, honest city councilmen who want to do a good job, all they are hearing is this.
Mm-hmm.
So here is a federal grant. Well, that's federal policy. Here are all these people telling us, here's what they're doing in other communities. Here's what they're doing here. And so they think, well, this is a proper role of government. This is what's happening, and so we need to go along with this.
You actually call it grant poison.
Yeah, it's spreading the poison with the grants. The grants come with specific language in it that says you must do these things to comply. And a lot of communities weren't complying totally to some of these grants, and an NGO organization that consisted of two people, a man and his wife, in Westchester, New York, took a look at what that community was doing with the grants, and they said, they didn't comply here, and they didn't comply here. And they filed a lawsuit against them, and they won a major lawsuit that they didn't comply with the grants. All of a sudden, HUD just stopped in its tracks, turned around and said, Hey, and all of a sudden HUD started filing those lawsuits in communities. They did one in California, they did one in Iowa, and some other ones, and now this becomes, what happens here is, if your community leaders don't comply to all this, they will suddenly find the city being run by agents of HUD and other agencies because they didn't comply, telling them, well, here's what you have to do. And so now we see these grants spreading across the country. This doesn't just happen. As I said earlier, your local planning commission and so forth will be telling you all this is just local, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It is a federal program and based on international programs, and things don't just spread from California to Minneapolis to Oregon to Baltimore to, where it is. They don't just happen overnight, and that's what we're seeing happen with this racist single-family homes that we've got to do away with.
Now, keep in mind, again, folks, there's grant poison. I mean, the strings that are attached with taking these grants, and there is a lot of pressure that is being put on lawmakers, whether it be on the city level or state level. Take the money. This is free money. This is free money. I remember how our former governor, Scott Walker, was just rung through the ringer in the press because he would not take the free money from the federal government on issues pertaining to health care, but he saw the strings that were attached with this and rightly, stopped that from taking place. But we've got all these local governments who are hungry and thirsty for increased revenues, who are seeing this carrot dangled out there. They're going for it, and with that, Tom, there's a lot of detriment to the community.
Yeah, this is a typical tactic that these NGO organizations will use, just what you just said, that if you have a city council that's wise to this, and they say, nope, we're not going to take that grant, they will start this pressure in the media and all the other outlets that they've got to pressure and say, your elected officials are costing you your tax money, and they just build that pressure up, and it's very hard to resist it.
Now, you mentioned the HUD program, the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing. Was there a rule that went forth, an official way to rescind what came through from the Obama administration? I thought Ben Carson was really making progress.
Yeah, I've seen several things where he has put forth a plan to reduce it, so forth, and he put it up for comment. That's a common thing they do, is they put it up for public comment. I haven't heard another word since then of anything being rolled back. We actually delivered over 1,000 petitions on that, comments to people who were opposed to it. But you can bet that the other side really buried him under this, and there's just massive pressure, he's not making progress with it.
And the deep state very much at work. Tom DeWeese is with us today, single-family housing under attack. We'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did plants evolve?
Chris, according to evolution, both plants and animals evolved from an original single-cell organism, which itself came from non-living chemicals. If you look in a book on plant evolution, you'll see many references to plants changing into other types. But when you look for the evidence, you'll be disappointed. Now, there is a lot of evidence that plants have varied over the years, but did they evolve from something else? We have lots of different kinds of algae and ferns and flowering plants, but no clue that any of these basic categories evolved from another. Each were created separately, just like it says in Scripture. In Genesis, we read that God created each basic type after their kind, not by changing one kind into another. Face it, Chris, evolution didn't happen. Now creation, that happened. And we read about that when we go back to Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Tom DeWeese is with us today. He's president of the American Policy Center. And, folks, he's been warning the nation on so many of these issues that stem from Agenda 21 and certainly from the United Nations documents, Agenda 2030, things that have whittled their ways down to the topics of sustainable development and smart growth, the American Planning Association, quite a history of programs that he's had alone here on Crosstalk as well as on his website. We'll be giving that information here in a bit, so be ready to jot down the information. Tom, as I mentioned the first segment, this is really happening all over. I've got a copy here from the Mercury News, California. They've got a bill that's working through the legislative process right now. It's Senate Bill 50. And guess what? It loosens zoning laws to allow multifamily buildings in communities once designated exclusively for single-family homes. This would allow for multifamily housing units in even the most exclusive of neighborhoods. Leadership there said that the legislation is going to move forward, and they're actually using the term called upzoning.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Of course, you are going up as you get into it. But, the up is the population that will now live in that neighborhood and everything that comes with it. And, in Minneapolis, one of the councilmen there said, well, we're not going to take away anybody's privileges here. We're just going to build these apartment buildings in there as well. You can still park your car on the street, and you can still, have your single-family home here if you want to do that and everything. What people don't, need to understand here is that the bottom line to this is that the property values of those homes are going to go down. And so the equity that people build into that is the center of our economy, is private property. And I don't know how many people really understand that. But, one of the things, if you watch economic casts, they're talking about the economy and so forth, they'll talk about housing starts. And you're starting to hear now some of these economists saying housing starts are down. Well, that's a danger to the economy. Housing starts are down. Why do you think housing starts are down? Mm-hmm. Because they're stopping building housing, mm-hmm. and everything's going into apartments. Then you have the people who have worked hard to get their homes in these neighborhoods and have a nice home to live in are going to see the equity there go down. That's going to affect loans. That's going to affect the economy. 60% of the businesses in this country were started by people using the equity in their private housing, and that's diminishing. That's going away. As private property diminishes, the economy, the value of the country diminishes.
It's interesting. This article from the Mercury News was in May, and then in June, of course, we were starting to see this bill advance that will impact the entire state of California. But let's go to the other end of the country, and I'm looking at Charlotte, North Carolina. There was an opinion piece in the Charlotte Observer this past May with this headline, "The Racist Roots of Single-Family Zoning." And talk to, again, Tom, the single-family zoning in Charlotte arose a century ago in a clearly racist context. And then they speak about the city working on its 2040 comprehensive plan that dials back sprawl, better for the environment, and that in neighborhoods where only single-family homes, well, we're going to start allowing duplexes and triplexes, maybe, and making a case for quadruplexes. I mean, this is really the camel's nose in the tent, isn't it?
Absolutely, and where this is headed, as I said, the smart growth policy of Agenda 21, so sustainable development, where everybody is living in the cities. I mean, we have all kinds of things we could talk about happening in the rural areas that are destroying the ability to live in the rural areas, and people are coming into the cities. Now we get them into the cities. How does it help the environment? Oh, yeah, we can control energy use. We could spend the next hour going into smart meters and that sort of thing. And that is where it goes. The bottom line here is, as single-family housing is destroyed, and now we're also having this attack on landlords. So they're telling landlords that, they're putting rent controls on landlords even after they raise their taxes and raise their prices of building and all that, and they aren't allowed to charge this much for a rental. So they go out of business. The bottom line here is eventually all private property is gone and all housing is government housing. That's sustainable development, Agenda 21. It's the goal from the beginning, and that's where this is headed, and they are really start, you know, striking it up much harder than they have in the past.
I'd like to just throw one little tangent into our discussion today and another iron in the fire, and that's eminent domain, Tom. I was looking, and it sparked me because of I was reading our local paper here this past weekend, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and they told of a number of properties that are being taken by eminent domain, that they're looking to do this in Brown Deer, Wisconsin. That would be the suburb of Milwaukee area. And so that the village can create this public park with a community shelter, a splash pad on a one-acre site. And there's a phrase in the article that caught my attention. It said the article stated that the village board unanimously approved a resolution stating that the park is a necessary and a public purpose that warrants the use of eminent domain. Your response?
Yeah. Eminent domain became a major tool in putting these things in place in 2006 when the Supreme Court ruled on the Kelo decision. The Kelo decision said if a community can determine that taking private property from this entity and giving it to the use, and particularly to another private entity, which would be a developer or something, if that use will be a better use for the city, in other words, they might make higher taxes on it or something, then that's okay. As soon as that ruling went through, several thousand eminent domain cases popped up across the country of the community starting to use it. And the whole thing with sustainable development, it has this little bit of kryptonite in it that is they don't want you to know about how it can be stopped. They cannot implement sustainable development policies without destroying private property. And so that is why you see these attacks in every direction on private property. They can't allow that to stand. Somebody owning property and controlling their own property is an independent act that doesn't fit into their well-ordered society.
Any connection between what we're seeing here, this attack on single-family housing, and the Green New Deal?
Oh, absolutely. The Green New Deal is this whole thing on steroids. And that's, you know, all these different policies we're talking about, there are no private property rights in the Green New Deal. And everything is about, again, talking about protecting the environment. Well, how do you do that? Well, first of all, it's calling for massive amounts of wildlands out in the West, out in the rural areas, not just the West, but also in the East. So, and, no-go zones. You can't use it for anything. This becomes, Hernando de Soto, Peruvian economist who wrote a book, The Mysteries of Capital, Why It Works in the West and Nowhere Else. He talked about these areas where nobody's allowed to own property, allowed to use it, as dead capital. And he said there's $10 trillion in the world of dead capital where nobody is allowed to use this property to as we've talked about, building equity, things like that. Think how that would help the world economy and help the poor and everything else if we were able to use that land for capital.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, not allowed. This is all part of it, and the Green New Deal is that on steroids.
Tom, I'd like you to address how this can be countered or if it's a lost hope. I mean, we're seeing this happen in Minneapolis, Chicago, Charlotte, the whole state of Oregon. California is looking at this statewide. It's going to individual communities all across this nation. Can it be countered?
I believe that it can be, and I am. Let me just put some positive spin on this because people need to have hope. They need to, and I do. They have gotten so bold, the people putting these programs in place, that they've gotten arrogant. The Green New Deal is massive arrogance on their part. They don't think we're smart enough to understand it and try to stop it. And as I said, property rights is the weakness in all they're doing. And so what I'm teaching people across the country is, first of all, you've got to be part of the discussion. You've got to be there. They've got to hear from you. Yes, they're going to put you down. Yes, they're going to treat you with arrogance and so forth. But they are terrified that you will learn that private property rights is the key to stopping this. And, you know, our founding fathers put our system together where the government that would have the most impact on you is the local government. And yeah, we've broken out of those reins quite a bit in different ways, but it's still true. And the other side knows this, and they have used these local communities to put these things in place rather than overall federal regulations and so forth in a lot of cases. Go begin to organize in your own community. You have to understand these comprehensive blueprints in the city they're putting together, and that you have to research that. But you begin to ask one single question over and over again. What protections do I have for my private property from this? And you will begin to hear city councilman after city councilman saying, "What? What's that? And they'll stutter and so forth. And as soon as they refuse to even admit that they will protect your private property rights, and there's not a word in any of those comprehensive plans that property rights are to be protected, begin to put their pictures on that comprehensive plan, make photographs of it, and pass them out, and begin to tell people these people are stealing your property, and begin to make them responsible for their own issue. They are terrified that you'll do that, and it works. I've seen it work. When people begin to do it, they will run for the hills as soon as they start seeing this kind of pressure come at them. But too many of our people go at it by themselves. Or they say, we can't do anything. And as soon as you say that, then you're right. You know, you have to fight, and we have to start now. I am seeing more elected officials begin to wake up to this. I'm getting more calls from them saying, what do I do? And we're working on training. We're trying to put together a training program for elected officials who are good guys, who are with us on these things, teach them how to stand up from the inside and fight from there.
Tom, we're also approaching election season. How critical is it for people that have this understanding, this basic understanding, to run for their city offices, aldermen and planning commission members and county board members?
Absolutely. It's so often we can't find anybody to run against these people. And this, give it to them. Let them have it. And one of the things I've been advocating for a couple of years, we have got to make private property rights a major campaign issue. It's not on the radar for anybody. We got health care, we got taxes, we got, and of course the environment, all those kind of things as issues that every candidate and every party are talking about. None of them are talking about protection of private property. And we need candidates to start running campaigns to say that. We also need people to start asking that question at every single town hall, at every public meeting, everything. What about protection of my property rights? You will be shocked to watch the look on their face, like almost like, what's a property right? That's what we have to do to make it an issue.
Government knows best, folks, and as Tom has pointed out, this is leading us to a time when all housing is going to be government-controlled. Tom, you've got a website where you've got a volume of pieces of information there.
Yeah, our website is AmericanPolicy.org. AmericanPolicy.org, and we have been working for many years now. We've got an archive of articles that we've written on all these issues. We've got tools that we've created. We've got a little booklet called Agenda 21 and How to Stop It. I just updated it. It's brand new, and it gives you background and more what to do, and several other tools we have on there. Of course, my book, Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals, I wrote it as a handbook for activists to use to fight.
AmericanPolicy.org is the site, AmericanPolicy.org. Tom DeWeese, our guest, we're opening our phone lines today. Folks, your reaction, your questions. Single-family housing under attack. Our number, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829.
Evolution as an idea is considered a rock-solid truth among secular scientists. But when you begin looking at the evidence and asking simple questions, you find their conclusions to be just fragile assumptions, unproven myth, and outright misconceptions. Like a glass house on shifting sands. In the book, Glass House, general editors Ken Ham and Bodie Hodge, along with a team of credentialed scientists, researchers, and biblical apologists, take on the pillars of evolution. The truths they reveal decimate Darwin's beliefs using a biblical and logical approach to evidence.
Learn what science is and how science is actually devastating to evolution. You'll also learn how evolution developed from unproven science to a popular and cultural worldview. Copies of Glass House are available for a donation of $16 or more to VCY America. Call 1-800-729-9829.
Minneapolis, Chicago, Charlotte, folks, it goes on, entire states, Oregon, California, your community coming next, single-family housing under attack. Tom DeWeese is our guest here today and talking about private property rights in this regard, but the plan that is so moving forward, and it's coming like a unified voice from corner to corner in this country, calling single-family homes and neighborhoods as being racist. Now, we're addressing this issue today, and Tom giving thoughts on how this can be fought on the local level because of where this is leading and how it's impacting families and private property rights and the very, very basic freedoms that we have across this land. And we're taking your calls here today on Crosstalk at 800-733-9829. The lines are packed right now, but as soon as you hear a caller finish with this, that's your opportunity to give us a call. Let's go right to the phone lines. Tom is calling in from Minnesota. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Thanks again for another interesting program. I just had a comment. I had worked many years for a natural resource agency in Minnesota, and this was a few years back, but we had intercepted a plan from, I think it was Earth First, and it kind of goes along with what you were saying. The state was broken up into like three or four big population zones, and the rest of the state was just wilderness. That it was a no-go zone where people weren't allowed to go. So It was just a comment that that was a few years back, like I said, you picked it up.
Wow.
I believe it was what Earth First. So this has some pretty diabolical roots, to the whole thing.
Thank you, Tom, for sharing that. Tom DeWeese, the planning has been going on for some time for this sort of thing to go on.
Absolutely. What he's talking about, Earth First, Dave Foreman, the head of Earth First, came up with a plan called the Wildlands Project. And what it called for was, these are their words, rewilding 50% of all the land in every state back to the way it was before Christopher Columbus. And this is what is happening across the country and in the rural areas where they're working on controlling water and how things are, grazing lands and all that sort of thing, and everything being wilderness. We talked about the cattle thing and what's happening to the cattle industry, and one of the things they're telling them to, in order to be sustainably certified, is that they have to turn over so much of their land to wilderness, and so they can't graze there and that sort of thing. It's the Wildlands Project. The thing with the Wildlands Project is what I said in the past, of the ravings of a lunatic like Dave Foreman became the basis for the UN's Biodiversity Treaty, and so there they became, these nutcases became international policy.
So from Minnesota, let's go next to Newark, Ohio. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, it sounds like it's more or less that we're heading towards communism, it sounds like, because 1917, when Russia was in the same position we are now, and then communists came in, they shoved everybody in houses and took away their lands and all that, and that's exactly what it sounds like we're trying to do. And on top of the taking the lands away from the farmers, they got to tend to remember one thing. We have to eat, too,
Yeah, yeah.
Mark, you are from my hometown, Newark, Ohio.
Oh, well, yeah?
Go Wildcats. you are absolutely correct, and the first time that I ever called this communism, I did it very cautiously, and today they're openly saying, well, they at least are calling it socialism, and some of them are calling it communism, but when you have the government control all the land, control the economy, control every decision that you make in your life, what you're going to eat, where you're going to live, what jobs you can have, and of course what they're doing in the classrooms and school, what do you call it? What we are seeing today is a classic move by that have been used by communists that have taken over countries all over the world. we're seeing just a classic case of how that's done.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Leroy in Atlanta, Georgia, you're on the air.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Tom?
Hi.
All right, so here locally, there's this lady named Miss Maddie. She's 97 years old, and the city of Atlanta, from what I understand, have already taken her house, and they're official, and they use eminent domain to do it, and their official position is they are waiting for her to die in order to completely take the property. Is there a way to use what you have stated about property rights? Can that be used to reverse it at this point?
Well, you know, it's difficult. I won't tell you it's not, how this is done. And, you know, does she have family? Is this supposed to inherit the property if she passes on? Do they have anything to say about it? You know, they would be the ones that would have to speak up on it. But I really believe, I'll tell you, I get calls constantly from people across the country with these very kinds of questions that they're dealing with their individual property. And what we have to do is begin a political movement, because there's not enough lawyers in the country to take on each one of these individual things, and most of the lawyers don't understand these issues to begin with and don't know how to fight it. They're always capitulating. This is one of the things I'm really working on, is trying to get people organized to be heard. And one of the things they just cannot deal with is a bright spotlight on what they're doing, and of course getting the better people elected. So I wish that I had the silver bullet to hand you and say, yep, just do this and you take care of it. But they've come so far, there isn't such a silver bullet. We have to, work and begin to organize and work in groups.
But this can be reversed, though.
Yes, it can.
Okay. I'm going to do whatever I can to try and reach out to Miss Maddie and have them contact you, because this is ridiculous. I mean, to take someone's property, and she's alive, and it's to build a park.
Yeah.
It's to build a park.
Yep, and that's what they're saying. You know, this is for the, you know, the common good, or this is necessary for the community. A necessary and a public purpose will often be the words. Thank you, Leroy, for the call. Let's go next to Florida. Pensacola, Florida. Don, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. 2 Corinthians 3:17 says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. So if there's no liberty with the private property rights, God's not in it. And like the previous caller said, two or three before me, this is a diabolical or satanical control.
Take a look at what the attacks on Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the main lines we're getting now, is the attacks on Christianity. We have representatives, churches, and so forth across the country that are now beginning to capitulate in these things. They have focused on that at least since the 1990s. And so there you go. They're working in tandem in both directions.
Yeah, and keep in mind, one of the properties in this eminent domain here in this area is a church. And I guess we find that it's more, this splash pad, Tom, has become so important for the community that would supersede even that of, the single-family housing, that of a church, et cetera.
Absolutely. One of the things that the churches are experiencing is, in many cases, churches are big buildings with very large roofs and parking lots. And this thing now of rainwater, somehow that's a violation, that the rain is falling on your roof and your parking lot, and I don't know. That's a violation in certain ways.
Well, yeah, and you got these entities then, like churches, that are being charged for wastewater that runs down, through their parking lot into the sewers, and being charged for that when it rains.
That's what I was trying to say. Yeah, you're right. That's it. Yeah.
Don, thank you for the call. We've got some open lines here today. And folks, like your reaction to this, as single-family housing is under attack, our number 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Tom DeWeese is our guest here today. And Tom, it really takes an engagement on a local level, doesn't it, to be at those city meetings?
Absolutely. As I said, you'll hear city councilmen will say, well, the people decided this. I mean, the people who were there, I haven't heard this argument that you're making. I've never heard of Agenda 21. I mean, we hear that all the time. And there are thousands of these non-governmental organizations that have their own private agendas, and they work together. They've got billions of dollars in funding, and they are in every single community. And keep in mind, when they introduced Agenda 21 in 1992, they said this is a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society. So that should tell you everything you need to know about this, based on whose ideas and, you know, this is what you have to ask. It's their ideas. It's how they want you to live. And the reason is it makes you easier to control. And that's what is behind all this.
Let's go to Mike in Wheeling, West Virginia. Mike, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. My question is, I noticed last couple of years or so, last 5 or 6 years, in my town in Wheeling, there have been some out-of-state companies that have come in and bought up old warehouses. One's in the process of buying the old Wheeling-Pittsburgh steel building and putting apartments in. Another company did so with a large department store that closed down years ago, and they made apartment buildings into that. Is this the trend I should be looking for? Maybe also trying to find out who these companies are, where they're from, and who are the people behind it, who owns it, where they get their funding, et cetera.
Yeah, it's most definitely a trend that is moving in communities all over the country. One of the things, I can't say what your example is, whether this is true or not, but in a lot of the cases, there are public-private partnerships between particularly larger global corporations and the government. And what happens is these corporations say, we will promote these ideas, we will put these plans in place, like you're talking about, putting apartment buildings in, that kind of thing, all under the smart growth sustainable thing. And for doing that, they will get to go to the head of the line for all the goodies that government hands out, tax breaks, the locations where they put their businesses or whatever, making it very, very difficult for a small company to start a small company and do something with it. The government gets to hide behind the independence of these private companies. The companies are, listen to the advertising you hear on television, so and everywhere you look now, everything is sustainable. We only go to sustainable farmers. We only have sustainable goods. We have, our whole housing is now built in a sustainable way. That is private corporations using their advertising budgets to promote the government program. In exchange for that, they get goodies. That public-private partnerships are not free enterprise. They are right out of the Mussolini fascist playbook, and there is no freedom anywhere in there.
Thank you, Mike, for the call.
Thank you.
Let's get in Steve, Salina, Kansas. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom and Jim, you know these private government entities, when they schedule these meetings, a lot of people at work, or at least where I live at, they have to take off work, and you've actually got to go out and, you know, find out when their meetings are, because they rely on that, and then they say they speak for the public. Well, they do, but they really don't.
Yeah.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and they don't. They do everything they can to make it more difficult, and of course, when you finally do get there, they are so generous, they grant you 3 minutes to talk to them.
Yeah, good point, Steve. Thank you for the call. Back in just 1 minute, Tom DeWeese is with us today. Folks, have you checked out his website, AmericanPolicy.org? AmericanPolicy.org. We'll come back to more of your calls right after the break. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. Last week, we had the tragic shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. And liberals are quick to blame conservatives and Christians and claim it is due to racism. Reality is, the progressive socialist liberals should be celebrating what has just occurred, because they have been agitating for it and creating it for generations. They have been deliberately trying to destroy the institutions of America that have led to this tragedy, and more to follow. So why are they crying? Why are they upset? You and I both know most of these progressives are not upset at all. This is what they have wanted. Chaos. They've wanted to destroy the family, law, order, sanctity, security. Why? So they could exploit the crisis. As Saul Alinsky said, change comes from the conflict. Agitate to the point of conflict. The progressives have gotten what they wanted. They've removed God from America's moorings, and this is the fruit.
You know, our caller right before the break said, yeah, they make these meetings hard to be at times. I'll tell you this, that what one of the things that we have found in some legislation that they just passed through in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, Tom, they give 24 hours notice with their agenda. And sometimes people have no idea if some of these very important things are going to be discussed, and they put out their agenda 24 hours in advance and try to keep the public clueless as to what's going on.
Yeah, and where do they publish it? Where do they say
this?
That's becoming more difficult to find as well.
Right. Now, you found a quote from Mayor Bill de Blasio out of New York. Tell us about it.
Yeah, he was doing an interview, I think it was like last November, with New York Magazine, and he said this: what's been hardest is the way our legal system is structured to favor private property. I think people all over the city of every background would like to have the city government be able to determine which building goes where, how high it will be, who gets to live in it, and what the rent will be.
My.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Let's go back to the phone lines from Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi. New Jersey implemented this spring the tax on the rainwater, and the exact quote is, because you're collecting it. And I'm going, how can you collect rainwater in a gutter when it just flows out into the ground?
Yeah.
But it's also based on the square footage of the roof.
Mm-hmm. My.
Just another way to tax you. That's all it's about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Redistribution of wealth, one way or another, we're going to get it. I have some of my gutters are clogged because leaves fell in them, and so I got water that stays in there. I didn't do it on purpose.
Do you get a tax credit then if you don't dispel it into the ground? Or? Thank you, Barbara, for making us aware.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Judy in Waukesha. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Jim, and good afternoon, Mr. DeWeese.
Hi there.
As just a simple citizen, I would just say that some of these homes that they want to get rid of and put big buildings up, some of these homes have been in the family for generations. Mm-hmm. And to have to just leave, you know, is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then I believe it was during Obama's watch that out west, they have a lot of forest land. I don't know if it's Idaho or one of those states. He told people many, many miles around, they all had to leave their homes, and he wanted it all to be for forest.
Yeah, yeah. They put these buffer zones around, and the purpose of the buffer zones, when they lock away a certain part of land and they put a buffer zone around it, the purpose of the buffer zone is to eliminate human activity there. And as soon as they succeed at that, like a biosphere reserve or something, then they will expand the boundaries of the biosphere reserve and they'll put a new buffer in it. It's like a cancer cell. It just steadily eats away at human settlements and move people out of there. This is what they do.
Thank you, Judy, for the call. Karen is next in Florida. Karen, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Two questions. How does this, when we have a president like President Trump, who I think would respect property rights, how does it trickle up to him? And how do you get politicians? I know you say start at the local level. So would you get your politicians engaged at that point with citizen involvement on the local level? How does that...
Here's the thing that we have to understand. Politicians, unless they are completely involved in a specific issue, you know, that's their purpose of being there, that they're part of that. Other than that, they go by what they're hearing, what the trends are, what people are saying. And we aren't saying anything. We're just letting them do this where the other side is. They are surrounding them and telling them, here are the policies, here's the grant money, here's what you have to do. And we're just sitting there going, well, nothing I can do about it. And so our side is completely ignored on this. And that's why I'm trying to tell people we've got to start advocating at the local level to make it an issue at the local level. And if we can begin to get some city councils, some county commissions, begin across the country to do some things to protect property rights, state legislators will look and say, you know what they did in my county, one in my district? They did this. And then we might be able to get some state level, and then it moves up to the federal level. Trying to go to the federal level down is a very difficult thing to do, but you can make an impact in your local community, and it can move up like that.
Hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Merle in Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, I tell you, this should send a chill down everybody's spine. The sad part of it is our youth in college right now are being indoctrinated to the point where they will actually be more acceptable to it because the whole climate change scare and everything else, saving the planet, the earth, going away in 12 years. But I believe Trump has given us a 4-year reprieve. But that agenda, I mean, we are a year and a half away from that whole agenda just coming like a freight train. Mm. So I just tell the church to be praying and stay on your toes. And I thank you for your program, Jim. It's amazing that you're bringing all this to light. And keep it up, brother.
Thank you, Merle. Appreciate your call here today. Tom, as we talk about this issue here, I know that when you talk to, you know, like the American Planning Association, they'll say, hey, this is just all local level stuff.
Yeah, when we first started to put the pressure on this, they panicked because we suddenly had people coming into city councils and talking about it, asking about it. And people, of course, were talking about Agenda 21. And they immediately rushed to create on their website Agenda 21 myths and facts to say, oh, this isn't true. And they said in there, they assured communities that the planning protects private property, preserves and protects its value. And they said, planning preserves neighborhoods, providing certainty to owners, homeowners. Of course, none of that was true. And now, I've just got this the other day, they are putting together a webinar program where they're going to start to teach planners various things, the new examples. They're going to teach them new examples of cities approaching the challenge of climate change in creative and innovative ways, rethinking transportation, the greening of city buildings to protect against sea level rise. And then it goes on to say that the speakers at the webinars, I'm quoting from this, will offer guidance which contextualizes international, national, and state mandates and goals.
Wow. International and national goals. Boy, folks, it's right there. It's right there. AmericanPolicy.org is the website. AmericanPolicy.org. As always, Tom, thanks for helping to educate our audience on this critical matter.
Well, thank you for letting me talk to the audience. Thank you.
Stand by, if you would, here on the line. Tom DeWeese with us here today. And indeed, folks, single-family housing under attack. It goes beyond that. The whole aspect of private property rights under attack as well. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.